School Finance, Room 137, March 3rd, 1981. Hearing Room 137, 1:30 p.m. Public hearing, Senate Bill 305, Veterans Property Tax Exemption. Senate Bill 384, Federal and Military Retirement Income Tax Exemption. Senate Bill 477, Military Retirement Income Tax Exemption.
We'll come to order, and the clerk will note those not present, and the ones who are not present have been excused, and the record will show. All right, we're going to start hearing on Senate Bill 384, but I will allow Representative Yee, are you here? She would like to testify both on Senate Bill 384 and 477. And before you may step up to the witness stand, if you will, please, I would like to have our staff briefly give us an explanation of the contents of Senate Bill 384 and 477 and the fiscal impact, if you will, please. And then we'll call on you, Representative Yee.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 384 increases from $3,400 to $6,500 the amount of federal retirement income that may be excluded from Oregon taxable income. The bill also eliminates the income eligibility ceiling of $25,000 and eliminates the dollar-for-dollar offset for any income earned above $3,400. For military retirees, the exclusion still applies only to those age 65 or older, but no longer has a dollar-for-dollar offset for income earned above the exclusion maximum. The bill applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1 of 1981. And I've estimated the revenue impact of this bill for 1981-83 to be $14.1 million.
Can you go ahead to 477, please?
Senate Bill 477 generally makes military retirement treated the same as federal civil service retirement. The bill will allow military retirees under the age of 65 to exclude up to $3,400 military retirement income from Oregon taxable income, which is currently allowed for those over 65. The bill requires that those under 62 must reduce the $3,400 exclusion dollar for dollar for any earned income above $3,400. If household income is $25,000 or more, no exclusion for retirement income is allowed. Again, these provisions are identical to the requirements for exclusion of other non-military federal retirees. I've estimated the 1981-83 revenue impact to be $1.6 million reduction of the state general fund.
Thank you very much. Representative Yee, we'll start on Senate Bill 384, and then when you finish with your testimony on that, I'll take your testimony on 477.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative May Yee from District 36. I'm here today to voice my support for the basic principle contained in Senate Bills 384 and 477. Both of these bills are intended to equalize tax treatment of federal retirement benefits, whether the benefits are military or civil. This equalization of military and civil benefits is more important than the amount of the exemption allowed. Senate Bill 477 would make the two pensions exactly the same for tax purposes without changing the amount of the exemption. Although an increase in the tax benefit to the military retiree will have an impact upon the general fund, this should be considered as the cost of giving equal treatment to the two groups, which should be treated equally, but have not been yet. Several states do not tax military retirement pay at all, as indicated on the handout sheets I have given to you. There are five states who do not tax military retirement benefits. I'm not familiar with treatment of civil retirement pay in those states. It seems clear to me, however, that we should give the greatest benefit we can to the men and women who have given so many years of their lives to help make our country strong. For purposes of this discussion, this means equal treatment of military and civil retirement income. I urge your support of the basic principle of Senate Bill 477 and Senate Bill 384, equalization of military and civil retirement pay. And I also would like to introduce two constituents from my district, Colonel Warren Campbell from Corvallis and Colonel Chet Hyatt from Auburn. Colonel Campbell has served in the armed services for 25 years, and Colonel Hyatt has served for 22 years in the armed services. And I would appreciate your allowing their expression of their support for these two bills later.
We'll call them in line and they've signed up, Representative Yee. Do you have any questions from the committee? If not, thank you very much, and we appreciate you coming over.
Thank you for your courtesy of allowing me to testify.
As I told you, that even in the Senate, we afford the amenities and are civilized and carry that message back to the other House.
I'm glad to see that.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. We'll start hearings then now on 384, and I'm not sure that I am going to pronounce this correctly, but it looks like R.A. Wood. Is that correct?
It's R.A. Work, sir.
All right. I pardon you. It's my eyes, not
as
your,
I grow younger, I write better.
Well, so I understand. If you saw my script, and between my eyes and my script, they're both lousy, so I have a disadvantage as well. Okay? Go ahead, sir. You could just give us your name and who you represent for the record. We would appreciate it very much, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Revenue Committee, my name is R.A. Wirt. I reside in Ashland, having been an Oregon resident for 52 years. I am representing here today chapter number 134 of National Association of Retired Federal Employees. My appearance here today is to ask for this committee's support to Senate Bill 384, sponsored by Senators Debs Potts and Senator Hannon and Representative Lombard, and supported by others of the 81 legislature. As a federal retiree, I have a direct interest in this bill. It throws a needed lifeline to many low-income federal retirees and corrects an inequity concerning our state's taxation of retired federal public employees as was enacted in 1977. Let me get directly to a main provision of SB 384. This proviso will allow the deduction of $6,500 from federal retirement pay for state income tax purposes, regardless of income level. This bill would revise current tax law enacted by the 1977 legislature, which increased the deduction from $2,400 to $3,400, but denied any exemption to any federal retiree having household income in excess of $24,999. Through that particular House amendment to Senate Bill 406 of 1977, a small percentage of the class of federal public retirees was required to subsidize cost of the increased deduction to a large percentage of the federal retirees in Oregon. It works out this way, Mr. Chairman. It seems a safe assumption that any federal retiree having household income of $25,000 is in the 10% tax bracket. But in 1977, such individual lost his or her long-standing tax deduction. It had stood for 20 years, gentlemen, and thus has been required since 1977 to pay $340 per year increased Oregon income tax.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Under the 1977.
Just a minute. Will you pardon me just a minute?
Yes.
We have a question of Senator Monroe.
It appears to me that since the exemption prior to that bill was only $2,400, is that right? It used to have a $2,400 limit?
Yes, sir, prior.
But what it really cost them from what they had before was $240.
I can't agree with you, Senator.
No.
Because the exemption was raised.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about what they lost from what they had before was $240.
I understand
plus
your point.
Plus $100 that they didn't get that the others got.
I accept your point.
Okay.
Yes, sir. But the figure I want to refer to again, however, in my testimony, is that $360. And I see your point.
Okay.
Thus, a federal retiree with, no, I have to drop back. Under the 77 bill, the exemption was increased from $2,400 to $3,400 for all those federal civilian retirees having household income below $25,000. Thus, a federal retiree with household income less than $25,000, but who might happen to be in the 10% tax bracket, received a much-needed tax saving of $100 per year. For those in lower brackets, the relief was, of course, less. Each individual retiree who lost the exemption was therefore required to subsidize the increased benefit for 3 4/10 other federal retirees below the $25,000 household income level, but possibly still in the 10% tax bracket. By our best estimate, at least 2,000 federal retirees in Oregon lost their former long-standing tax deduction. The total loss of this subclass of federal public retirees, so created by the 1977 legislature, then subsidized the increased benefit to at least 6,800 other federal retirees in Oregon, but probably more, it being doubtful that many of the other retirees are in the 10% tax bracket. We federal retirees, Mr. Chairman and gentlemen of the committee, we're of course pleased that the 1977 legislature recognized the ravages of inflation on retirees by modestly increasing the long-standing tax exemption for 87% of our group. But we have never understood why 13% of our group were arbitrarily singled out to foot the bill, or at least a very considerable part of it. We retirees realize that our state is trying hard to make ends meet in these trying budgetary times. So are we. We aren't asking for charity. We ask only for consideration, fair play, and equitable tax treatment. I thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for your close attention.
Wait just a minute. There may be questions. Sir, would you
sure.
wait just a minute, Mr. Work? There may be questions from the
yes,
committee.
Sir.
Questions from the committee? If not, you're just a delightful witness. And thank you for coming so far. Yes, sir. Our next witness is Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dan Christensen. I reside in Salem, and I'm a member of the National Association of Retired Federal Employees. What I have to say is very brief, and I think it's mostly contained in the handout that you received. And the first reason that I think this is a good piece of legislation, it keeps up with inflation. Inflation has eroded our income as well as with many others. And I think another reason is that Social Security is not taxed and our retirement income is taxable. And I think it puts it somewhat on a par with them. And it also it puts us on a would put us more on a par with other states that, well, many of them, at least half of them, don't have the retirement income of federal employees, I don't believe, is taxed or is much less than what we have. It does seem to me that the financial impact of this is somewhat inflated, because I think it assumes that there aren't anyone that pays that do not, it assumes that all pay an income tax. But I think there's very many people on the bottom of the scale that aren't subject to the income tax because of the total family income. And then again, I think this is very hard to arrive at a figure, because the latest figures that we have, I think there was 2 3/10% of the retirees over the country that received less than $25,000 per year. Of course, that was just retirement income. Of course, we have to add to that other sources of income. So this would be a real difficult figure to arrive at. If that was true, it would only be 350 people in Oregon at 1978 October who would be subject to this type of tax. But undoubtedly, there's many more than that. And that would be about 350 in the state. And that is all. And thank you.
Mr. Christensen, thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Hanlon.
Our federal pensions geared to inflation, do they increase?
They do increase, yes, sir.
In your opinion, does the increase accurately reflect the increased cost of living here in Oregon, or is it more so or less so?
I find it's approximately about the same. It approximately equalizes it from what can be purchased back, you know, several years ago and what can be purchased now. It seems to be about the same par.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? One other question. Is your increase in Social Security commensurate, the increase that you receive commensurate with the same percentage that Social Security receives?
Well, I believe it is. I'm not in a position to say.
Right. I think there's some concern that maybe the federal retirement escalates faster than what Social Security is necessarily, and I'm not sure that's a true or accurate assessment. We've heard that charge from time to time that it was more rapid increase in the federal retirees who receive better consideration of that than they do at Social Security. I'm not sure that's true at all, but I just wondered what your opinion was.
I don't believe it is, because some of the figures I've seen, it compares very favorably. I mean,
okay, so there would be equity there if the exemption were granted.
I believe so.
Yeah. All right. Further questions? Not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Stanley Norton.
My name is Stanley Norton. I'm president of the Oregon Federation of Chapters of the National Association of Retired Federal Employees. I want to make only a few additional remarks to what has been stated in our written summary that has been handed to you, and to add to what the previous gentlemen have said. I represent a federation of 23 chapters with approximately 2,200 members in Oregon. In addition, the Portland chapter, which is not affiliated with the federation, has a membership of about 2,200 also. Their chapter has assured me of its support for our federation legislative goals. We believe there is ample justification for a higher income tax exemption for federal retirees based on significant increases in the cost of living over the past 4 years, and to achieve equity with exemptions granted to other classes of retirees, including Social Security, railroad, and state. I might say that the consumer price index, which is the basis for raising both federal retiree annuities, cost of living, and Social Security, is currently a subject of great concern at the federal level. Much concern over whether it's properly stated, whether it includes all of the classes of expenditure and that should be included. And there are some studies now existing which indicate that perhaps instead of benefiting the retired and the elderly, that the consumer price index tends to hurt them because it doesn't adequately measure the items that are they're most the elderly are most concerned with, which is heat, light, and food and medical costs. This is just an indication that is may increase the might increase the consumer price index consideration in the future. In our opinion, the $25,000 household income provision discriminates against a segment of the federal retiree population and is inequitable in comparison with all other segments of the retiree population. How fair can it be when only $1 in total household income, $24,999 to $25,000, could mean the difference for a federal retiree between receiving a $3,400 exemption and a reduction of $340 in tax and losing the exemption and paying $340 more in tax. Federal retirees are characterized all too often these days as an overpaid, overindulged group of people, an elite group, so to speak. Yet the facts refute this criticism. As of September 30, 1979, 29.4% of the annuitants received monthly annuities of less than $500. 59.2% received annuities of less than $800 a month. 82.1% of survivor annuitants received less than $500 per month, and 95.2% less than $800 per month. Yet all these annuitants together were bringing into Oregon gross annuities of nearly $14 million per month. And this is a sizable contribution to the Oregon economy. Now to deal in a little speculation. Unless inflation halts, and there's little reason to believe it will, federal retiree annuities will tend to rise in years to come as higher paid federal employees reach retirement age. It is also reasonable to believe that some form of cost of living increase will continue for federal retirees, and this will also contribute to higher annuities. These factors may tend to offset in the long run losses incurred by the state if tax exemptions for federal retirees are increased and the $25,000 household income provision is eliminated. On behalf of the Oregon Federation of Chapters, I urge favorable consideration of SB 384. Thank you.
Questions? Yes, Senator Trowe.
Could you tell me what do the other states do in this matter? About what do they all, for instance, deduct state income, federal retirement pay from the state income tax?
I think in our statement,
there's a chart here. I believe you have, Senator Trowe. Chart here, I believe.
If I can return to my briefcase, I can give you some information.
Well, I think what we would appreciate if you could provide that and we could add it to our staff. We would appreciate having that information if you could, sir.
I think the thrust of my question would be, do over half of them do do what we're asking in Senate Bill 384, half the states?
Yes, I think I could easily say over half do, and I thought we had something in our statement here on that. Oh, here it is. 25 states either do not tax federal retiree annuities or they provide a more liberal exemption than Oregon does. Of 20 states having income tax with varying treatment of federal retiree annuities, Oregon's present exemption is less than the median. And so that's in the second paragraph on the second page.
Thank you. I didn't see that. Yeah. I appreciate that. Any questions? If not, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, to Mr. Wade, Hugh Wade.
That's it. Thank the committee for an opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 384.
Excuse me, sir, would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Hugh Wade. I live at 3532 Augusta National Drive, Salem, Oregon 97302, and I'm a registered lobbyist for United Seniors. I'm also a retired officer of the United States Air Force, retired 1964 after 25 years of service. This would be four legislative sessions or 8 years that I'm aware of that the retired military personnel have endeavored to obtain some non-discriminatory treatment as far as tax exemptions is concerned. As you note, Senate Bill 384 is sponsored by the National Association of Retired Federal Employees, but it is also of interest and concern to retired military personnel. We are heartily in favor of the bill objectives. However, we hope this committee will consider an amendment to the bill to remove its discriminatory provisions as pertains to retired military personnel. Both federal and state tax laws define and consider federal civil service retirement and military service retirement as public retirement systems. Yet, our state has seen fit to differentiate between the two systems and provide different qualifying criteria for federal civil service and military service retirement. It is, in our view, patently unfair, inequitable, and discriminatory. All retired military personnel are asking is for a fair, equal, and non-discriminatory treatment. Specifically, under the present law as set forth in Senate Bill 384, retired federal civil service employees may claim a tax exemption if they are age 62 or older. However, in the case of retired military personnel, the tax exemption may not be claimed until age 65 or older. Then, to add insult to injury, such exclusion is reduced dollar for dollar to the extent of any earned income received during the taxable year. Again, may I say, all that retired military personnel are asking is for fair and equal treatment. Although I have no concrete proof, the discriminatory provisions of Oregon tax laws are apparently based on the erroneous idea that all military personnel enjoy a relatively lavish retirement income. This is far from the truth. The average retirement income of all ranks is less than $700 per month or about $8,000 per year. In addition, many retirees are disabled and unable to work and must depend largely on their retirement income. Surely it is time to equalize the treatment accorded federal civil service and military service retirees. Although I do not want to start a controversy, it is interesting to note that the retirement income of state civil service retirees under the public employees retirement system are exempt from state income taxes. Yet, I think everyone would agree, this system too is a public retirement system. What is the rationale for this difference in treatment? Frankly, I don't know. Perhaps the architects of Oregon's tax structure, in considering tax exemptions, were imbued with what is now known as the McCall syndrome, which encouraged people to visit but not stay in Oregon. For example, did you know that Rhode Island and Oregon are the only two states left with inheritance estate tax laws on the books, and that is as pertains to the survivor's benefits that military retirees may grant to their
$5,000. Have you checked as to what the property tax liability, given the HARP program and the 30% reduction, would be for most people in that category?
No, I have not. I'm sorry.
They should be nearly fully refunded as far as property tax is concerned. But inflation sure has raised the total liability, and I did co-author a bill like this 2 years ago.
There is one thing that I would like to point out, which was not graphically pointed out, perhaps not to the members of this committee, but to the people sitting in the audience, and that is that impact statement, it's true that this does not have any impact on the general fund. It has an impact on the entire state, but on a county-by-county basis.
Yeah. The entire
$3 million or so did not come out of just one county's coffers.
What I guess part of the point I'm making is that the reduction in tax liability in part may be to the state general fund as a passage of this bill, because our 30% amount on those would be less if there was an exemption, and the HARP payment would be is adjusted downward as well. So the real savings in this bill may be to the state general fund. It's kind of an ironic twist. Okay, no other questions. Thank you very much. Mr. Henry Stevenson.
Well, I started the day wrong already. I was worried about getting a parking place, and so I was in a hurry to get out of the house. And I closed the door, I realized my keys were in the house. Important to have a car key in my wallet. I get here and I find the important part of my note are on my table.
I just returned from Corvallis giving a speech, and I did the same thing, except my notes were in my office.
Great feeling.
That is. But my speech was shorter.
I think mine could be too.
The really interesting thing, I want to know how you're going to get back in your house. You come back tomorrow and tell us?
That's the problem I have yet to face.
Yeah,
my name is Henry Stevenson. I was born and raised in Salem. I am 56 years old. I'm a life member of the American Legion, the Disabled American Veterans, and a life member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart. These people will not know me because I do not attend meetings. I served with the 2nd Infantry Division in Normandy, France, and I'm combat wounded. In 1957, I purchased a home which was about 2 years old, excellent condition, beautifully landscaped, at 563 Claremont Drive. At the time I bought...
Senator Trope,
did you use our Veterans Loan Program?
Yes.
Good program.
Excellent. Excellent. At that time, the average price of a new home was about $15,000 for about 1,450 square feet. Nice homes. I considered my buy even better because mine was fully landscaped and had many improvements made to it. At that time, the property tax exemption was $7,500, which is better than 50% of the price of my home. Today, I figured that the average home, I'm not a realtor and I don't know, but I know prices have gone crazy. And I think that those same average homes, the same ones that back in 57 were selling for 13 and 14, 15,000, are now 60,000 or more. And I feel that I feel like I'm back in combat again. I don't know why I'm here. The state of Oregon gives me a wonderful present. That was a quarter of a century ago. I think the newspaper said it was in 1955 when they raised the tax exemption to 7,500. I believe the real date is in, I think the paper said 52, I think the real date is 55. I believe the original law, or what you call, I'm not a politician, so you'll have to excuse me. I don't understand the words and that. But I believe that this gift was given to the combat wounded in 1921, and I believe it was $1,000. Now this brings up a question to me as to what was the original intention of this bill. I think it was for combat wounded. Okay. Now, I don't think too many people are aware of what compensation the wounded veterans or the disabled veterans are receiving. Is there anyone here who can tell me what a veteran who's drawing 100% receives in dollars? You know what his check is? Want to guess? What do you think a veteran with 100% disability receives?
Well, you've explained it to me. I mean, it's
you know,
the most confusing formula in the whole world, and I couldn't repeat it because I know you took me through it one time. And
But the thing of it is, most people don't know. They figure that the combat disabled veteran, I use the word combat disabled because I think they're special. I think that was the original intent of this law. I don't know for sure, but I think it was. But most people don't know. They figure the government is taking real good care of the disabled veteran and they don't worry about it. Okay. At the current time, a veteran drawing 100% disability receives $1,016 tax-free. But what do you think the veteran receives that is 90% disabled? 90% of that? A disabled veteran that received 90% disability received 55 7/10% of what the 100% rate is. 55.7. He received $566. 90% disabled. You're in bad shape when you're 90% disabled. Okay, at 80%, you're not even getting 50. You're not even getting half. The 80% disabled veteran receives $503. That amounts to 49.5% of 1,016, which the 100% disabled veteran gets. Well, you'll have to excuse me because I'm all chopped up because of my notes. But I feel like I'm in combat again here. I don't know why I'm here. Why should I have to ask, or, you know, what happened? 25 years. I think like I said, I think the combat wounded should be treated specially. For one thing, as they grow older, they have additional health problems. They also have employment problems. I just heard a man say it's difficult at age 45 to go out and get a job. You put on an employment record that you took a bullet through your middle and you got a bad back, and see how well you do. The average World War II veteran right now, if I remember correctly, is 60 years of age. And with all the other problems, I realize the state's got problems, but if you think there's somebody that's between a rock and a hard place, it's a combat disabled World War II veteran. And some of the other veterans too. I feel real sorry for Vietnam. Real sorry. I don't know what the original intent of this bill was, of the law, but I think it was for combat wounded, people that were hurt defending our country. I don't understand why the exemption's cut off at 40%. Why not 50%? Why not 80%? Why not just give it to the people with 100% disability? How come you don't give it to the man that's got 30%? The man is combat disabled. Why don't you rate him according to the VA's rating? Figure out, I mean, if in 1957 when I bought my home, if it was worth $7,500, you can figure out what's happened to the value of property and the value of the dollar. It's not difficult. Adjust it. But make it equitable. If a man's got 100%, treat him special. If he's got 30%, give him a little help. I think the whole thing should be rewritten. It's inequitable. It doesn't make sense. And it's not that difficult to go back and see what's happened. About covered.
Okay, other questions? Mr. Stevenson, on the disability, then 100% disabled veteran is getting a total grant of $1,016 a year?
There are additional monies if he lost arms and legs. But if he, this is from the Veterans Newsletter right here.
That's a total amount?
Total amount for 100% disabled veteran is $1,016. If he has a family, there is additional money. If he has a wife but no child, he receives an additional $62. I'm trying to give a wife on that. If he has a child and no wife, he gets $42. It's true, it's tax free.
Could we get a copy of that to our
I'm sorry that things are, like I say. Another question here I have in mind. Was Vietnam a war?
Well, this committee is not going to make that determination.
No, I know, but this paper here from the Veteran Newsletter said property tax exemption for any war veteran. Mm-hmm. There could be a legal loophole there.
Yeah, we may be looking at some El Salvadorian
I don't know.
Troops or
who knows?
Okay. Thank you very much making do. You did very well for not having your notes.
I'm trying to speak for my fellow men. I hope I've done a good job.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Did anybody else wish to testify on the Senate Bill 305? Thank you very much for taking the time to prepare and come down and meet with us. Pardon? Oh, come on.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name for the record is William Bain, speaking for the Oregon Association of County Assessors. I only wanted to I wanted to address myself to the subject of Senate Bill 305 only from the standpoint of the of the technical issue involved and to point out to you that there are three House bills which have been introduced which relate generally to the increase also in the benefit, and to indicate that at least two of those relate to change in the amount of exemption from taxation relating to true cash value, and one relates to the exemption of assessed value. And simply to point out that I believe, and I think that the rest of the county assessors would certainly bear me out, that if in fact we could substitute some provision which stabilized that relationship, and I don't want to speak to the legislative prerogative of determining whether or not to grant that exemption or how much that exemption should be, but rather to stabilize that exemption with respect to the market value of the property, to reduce or eliminate the confusion that occurs in the eyes of the taxpayer, I think that would be a very desirable thing. If in fact the committee makes the decision that an exemption amount should be placed in there, and that perhaps it should be indexed in some manner, then certainly the idea of attaching it under the present law, attaching it to assessed value and then perhaps indexing it on that basis might make more sense. And I simply offer that to you for your consideration. Do you want the bills and those House bill numbers for reference at all?
Yeah.
2569, 2861, and 2929.
Maybe. So what you're saying is that we should use the assessed value for the purposes of taxation.
I believe it would be more clear to the taxpayers. Our experience at the field level as county assessors is that by applying $7,500 or $15,000 or $12,500, whatever that exemption figure is, to the true cash value, and then taking a state homestead factor and applying that back against the true cash value, we lose a lot of them in that process. Yeah. That winds up being $6,000-some-odd, and next year it'll be a different figure. My point simply is that if you decide that $12,500 is the right figure or $15,000 is the right figure and applied against assessed value and then either indexed on the basis of 5% per year or even a fixed $15,000, it will index to some degree simply because that assessed value factor will change from year to year on the homestead ratio under present law. I'd be glad to answer any other questions you might have along that line.
Thanks, Bill, for bringing that to our attention. Okay, with no one else here to testify, our committee time has expired. Again, thank you very much for your time. We'll just end the turn.
John, when I cut in there, I asked him that very question about the impact